Thank you. That was such a gracious, beautiful introduction.
That we'd like to leave now while we're ahead.
Is it time to go?
We have so many people who have collaborated with us on the Lost and Found Sound series. I'm Davia. This is Nikki, by the way. And we wanted to thank a lot of our collaborators who are here and so many people who brought us to this amazing event. Oral history has always been near and dear to us. As we were starting to become the Kitchen Sisters, I was busy applying to be an oral historian in graduate schools across America, including in North Carolina. So it's, as I said yesterday in the workshop, it's really wonderful to be part of this community in this way. And there would be no Lost and Found Sound without the contributions of so many archivists and oral historians and folklorists and sound collectors and all that. Are you waving or?
You can't hear us.
You can't hear me. Okay. Mm-hmm. Should I speak louder or should the mic get closer? Okay. How's that? Is that better? So I'll
we
say again.
We should use our own miking techniques.
All right.
In your face miking.
Okay. Is that better? There would be no Lost and Found Sound, as I was saying, were it not for the contributions of oral historians, of sound collectors, of archivists, of folklorists, of the sound hounds who have helped us. So many of you are in this room and you know how much you've helped us create it. Particularly, we want to thank Jacqueline Hall, who told us about Eddie McCoy, who we'll talk about later, and the Southern Oral History Program. Cliff Kuhn, Jim Laloudis, Bob Korstad, Sally Council, Linda Sellers, Amy Davis, Charles Hardy, the Center for the Study of the American South, the Southern Oral History Program, and the Southern Historical Collection. So many thanks to all of you and to anyone we left out. We thought we'd get into it with some tape.
We just want to play tape, actually. We started this project, Lost and Found Sound, about 4 years ago. It was kind of an effort to do an end of the century, millennial kind of project that looked at the history of recorded sound and how it's affected the last 100 years and how it's shaped the last 100 years and changed the last 100 years. It was an incredibly ambitious project if we took an encyclopedic approach towards it. So we sort of took a Kitchen Sisters approach to it, which was just, well, whatever hits us in terms of story, that's the direction we're going to go. And we really, as Davia said, relied heavily on people who were in charge of archives and sound collections to help us find those stories. And it was a huge collaboration. I think we counted up at one point, and there were about 750 people who have been involved in this project. Lots of different radio producers across the country, National Public Radio, historians, sound hounds, collectors. We really got into the collector field, and I'm sure, as you know, being involved with archives and oral history, there's a certain type of person who collects sound, and as well as photographs, and collectors are a magnificent group, and we've really relied heavily on them. One of the first programs that that sort of sparked our imagination for this project is a story about WHER, the first all-girl radio station in Memphis, Tennessee. And I think it sparked our imagination for a whole bunch of reasons. Partly because we're the Kitchen Sisters, radio producers, and we loved this idea that there was this whole entourage of women in the 1950s doing this magnificent project that we didn't know anything about.
The way it came to us, too, as much as a lot of the stories came to us, we told all our friends, everyone we were meeting, how we had, what we were doing, how we were developing this Lost and Found Sound idea. And I was working on this film, The Rainmaker, at the time that was shooting in Memphis. And a fella, Knox Phillips, said to me, oh, then you'll want to talk to my father and my mother. My dad and my mother started the first all-girl radio station in the world. It's like we'd never heard of that at that point. And at that moment, we found one woman who had created this station, Becky Phillips, the man being Sam Phillips, who had recorded Elvis and on at Sun Studios. And probably as you all feel with your work, we kind of came in that moment sort of sonic detectives, and kind of our audio forensics kind of began. And over the course of time, we found woman after woman after woman who had participated in this station.
And even as it went on air, that was not the end of it. When it aired finally on National Public Radio, a woman driving in her car in Florida heard the promo for it, screeched to a halt, pulled over, called her local station where she was, and said, "I was on WHER," and the affiliate station brought her into the studio and put her on air, and she was able to talk about her experiences as a WHER disc jockette right before our piece went on. So, I mean, that's the way in which this project has grown and ballooned and involved more and more people at radio stations and institutions throughout the country.
It was, in the beginning, you'll hear them talk about how many women we found, but it, as Nikki said, it kept growing. The project won the Peabody, and we created a big event at Grand Central Station where we invited everyone who had worked on Lost and Found Sound in New York, which was, I can't even tell you how many people, and we had this party at the Oyster Bar, and a woman in New York who was now a woman who wrote How to Succeed as an Executive Woman in Business, and I Mean It, or some book with some title like that, showed up and said, "Well, I was at WHER," and she had all these pictures. So it, people continue to find us, and I, just as you all are doing your work, I'm sure this happens as well. You let people know what you're doing, or you put it out into the ether, and it just so doesn't end there. It keeps coming back, and we keep creating new stories based on that. You queued up yet?
I hope so.
Okay, good.